All the windows of Halifax were shuttered and closed down. It was almost Christmas Eve. It was quiet on the town. There was snow on the streets. Everyone was inside. And I looked at my tree and I slowly cried. Well, I drove in my car. It was like I was on the moon. Thought of a warmer place in the middle of June. Sometimes this old snow makes me so mad. Sometimes for no reason I just feel kind of sad. Ah, the windows of Halifax tonight. Well, the first window says to the second window, how come you never open up? Second window says, I had my heart broke once, now I just stay closed shut. First window says, well, maybe you could see some kind of counselor or something. Maybe a window washer could help you see things more clearly. Because I think you're pretty attractive, but you always have your shade pulled down, and the sun can never come in. Well, the second window says, freak the sun by. The girl I love is back in St. Anthony in a big old house with overgrown weeds, and she's a beautiful window, and well, I can see all the way through her to her soul. Back in St. Anthony? I was imported from St. John's. I love Newfoundland. Well, the fellow that lives here in Halifax, he studied chemistry at Dalhousie University. But truthfully, he flunked out. But he's still a chemist. Well, actually, he's just a drug dealer. And we got people coming in and out of the house all night long. But I never have anybody to talk to, just bottle caps and cigarette butts being flicked my way. Dalhousie University, you say? Well, the fellow that lives here next door, he studied geography and archaeology over in Antigonish at St. Francis Xavier. But he flunked out too. Now the only mountains he sees are paper mountains from his failed thesis. Yeah, he's got some tinfoil trees, a cardboard river, and an ugly, ugly paper mountain he made from the drug dealer's trash outside. Sometimes this old snow, it makes me so mad. Sometimes for no reason, I just feel kind of sad. Ah, oh, the windows of Halifax tonight. Well, the windows of the Maritimes, they're all telling stories of the plentiful days, of the cod and the glory, or an explosion that rocked a French cargo ship in Dartmouth near the harbor. All the windows got clipped. Well, all of these windows, they're all telling stories. Some are so sweet, some are so gory. There was a murder one night no one ever speaks of. All the windows of Halifax tonight.
That is Steve Pultz in the studio with me here on Talkin' Music. That's the song Windows of Halifax off his new album, Shine On. Beautiful song. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me here. Yeah, I wrote that song as I was flying out of Halifax, where I was born in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, and there was snow everywhere, and I remember looking down at all the windows, and they were kind of twinkling as they'll do the lights because it was nighttime. And I asked the flight attendant if she had some napkins, some Air Canada napkins, so I could, because I had an idea for a song. And then I asked her if she had a pen too, and she started laughing, and I kept asking her for more napkins, and I was writing the song. But I knew it was going to be a waltz in the key of D.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it must have taken a lot of napkins, because those two windows that have that conversation, that's a long conversation.
It's a whole package of napkins. And you can't get them out of order because you can't fit a lot of words on the napkins because I write kind of big. Uh-huh. I don't have really great handwriting.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know.
So what is that like a typical of your writing process where it just kind of comes to you and you got to get it out and, you know, find some way to get it all on paper somehow?
Yeah, I'll just dial in on an idea and then it's kind of like stream of consciousness. But if it works for me and it makes me kind of smile or it makes me feel something, then I always keep going with it. It's kind of like fishing. You're not really sure what you're going to catch.
Right.
You know, but you got the line in the water. And then as I start singing or writing a song, and if it feels good, I keep going with it. And mm-hmm. sometimes the songs then are done, like they don't ever get played again. And other times they make it to the album.
Mm-hmm.
They're like the salmon that swim upstream and spawn.
Right. Do you feel like there was a theme with this album? Because I listened to this album and then I went back and listened to some of your older stuff. And I felt like this album is so sweet. This
right.
is very, like you've been described sort of as satirical. And it's
yeah.
not that there isn't some humor in this album too, but it just seems really sweet and positive. But it also kind of feels like it's like the sweetness that comes after a dark period.
Yeah.
That makes any sense?
Well, I think like I've made records that were like slamming punk rock records and loud, and then I was in the Rug Burns, and then I've done smart ass records, and this one,
smart ass.
You know what yeah. I mean? Like real kind of, like I did one that was 56 songs, but they were all 45 seconds. So, and that's called Answering Machine. And then some are goofy, but this one kind of, I guess the theme, it kind of took place. I wish I was that smart to come up with a theme and that mm-hmm. intelligent to really have a plan. But what happens is the songs kind of fit together.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I was in a sentimental, sweet mood, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked the way the record came out. I chased down this guy named Will Kimbrough, who lives in Nashville, where I live. And I wanted to make a record with him. I love his production. And he plays guitar for Emmylou Harris. He's her guitarist. Mm-hmm. And he played with Rodney Crowell. And he's just a really cool hang more than that. And so we would just go into his studio in his house. He had a studio in his backyard, kind of. And I would record just like I just did with you. I would sing it and then we would build upon what I did. So we were able to do the guitar and vocal as a live take and then add the other, I guess, bells and whistles and accoutrements into the song
mm-hmm.
and then strip stuff away so there wasn't too much. And it was really a fun process.
Why do you think you have such great chemistry with him? What is his sort of, what does he bring out in you and or maybe what you bring out in him?
Well,
too.
We're kind of like around the same age. And so in a way, we listen to a lot of the same music. And so we speak the same language. And it's kind of fun when you're with somebody and you're making a record and they're able to actualize what you're thinking. And you can maybe say, remember that one record by the Replacements? And it was called Sorry, Ma, I Forgot to Take Out the Trash or something. You go, I like how this was recorded or... You know, you could talk about a Warren Zevon record. He knows what you're talking about. Or a Joni Mitchell record. You could say, remember Court and Spark when she did Twisted and Cheech and Chong were on there, or Cheech. And
mm-hmm.
he starts laughing. And he knows exactly what I'm talking about. Mm. To the point where I have a song on the record called Ballin' on a Wednesday. And in the song, I say, watermelon sugar gonna take away my grays. Now, I didn't expect him to know where I got that line from about watermelon sugar, but it was from Richard Brodigan, this poet.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he even knew that, right when I said, watermelon sugar gonna take away my grays.
He's like, Brodigan, yeah.
And he looked at me and goes, you like Richard Brodigan? I go, yeah. It made it fun because we just laughed a lot, and we'd go eat food, and then we'd talk about the record. And it was so painless, which is how I like things to be.
Sure.
I like it to be easy.
Nice. Was there ever a time where you liked things to be hard? Or have you always sort of...
No, I always like it to be fun.
Yeah.
If it's not fun, I don't want to do it. It's like, I don't like to push through things that are really, really hard. I want it to be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that might be bad. I just don't want to... I like things to be mellow, and I don't want to stress over it too much. If it starts getting stressful and it's not fun, then I don't really want to do it, because I play music for a living because I love what I do, and nobody can tell me what to do when I'm on stage, and it's complete freedom. And then at the end of the night, they pay you a few bucks, maybe feed you, and you're on to the next city. And it's kind of a nomadic, I guess the word would be peripatetic existence. And you're a troubadour, just traveling and singing songs. You're almost like a court jester in a way, and able to go. And if people like you, they plop down their shekels and they buy some merch, and then they want to support you. But I don't stress it too much. I just figure what I'm doing and what music, what it all is, it's magic, basically. It's magic because you can hear it, but you can't touch it. But it can make you feel something, but you're not really ingesting anything. I guess you're ingesting it aurally rather than orally, but and you're getting this experience, and you get to feel something, and it's magic. It's I don't even want to overthink it. It's so magic. It's beautiful.
That's how I feel, too, as an audience member. The relationship between a musician and their audience is also completely magic, because there's something that's happening, like just watching a crowd swell to a song, too. There's all kinds of things being communicated and happening that don't happen really in any other way. It's a good time.
So true. It is so true.
Yeah, it's really fun. So one thing that happened to you in your life is that you co-wrote Jewel's song, You Were Meant for Me.
Right.
Which that was a huge hit, and you've worked with Jewel since, too. And I saw a video of you guys telling a story about a trip that you took together where you thought it was going to be a whale watching expedition in Mexico, I guess. But it turned out to be Mexican federales and it was a drug bust.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And the story itself is, you know, we could talk about that. But what really struck me was that I was watching Jewel tell the story.
Right.
And I thought, wow, she is not who I thought she was. For some reason, I thought that Jewel was this like super precious kind of hippie chick, folks, coffee house folk singer person. But she actually seems like a total badass. Like she just came off as way more sort of ballsy than I ever thought she was. Yeah, I'd like to hang out with her. She seemed like she'd be fun to hang out with. Can you tell me about some other things about Jewel that I don't know? Like maybe clear up some other misconceptions?
Well, I could see how you would think that, because, you know, the way she's, the way we package art, you know, it tells a story that maybe the person who's, the company that's selling it is wanting you to hear a certain story. And the intersection of art and commerce is always an awkward intersection, because you have the art and then you have the commerce and the way it's disseminated and the way they sell it. And so when I first met Jewel, and going back to what you said as well, you were right on the money. She is a badass. And when I met her, she was a barista at a coffee house called Java Joe's. And I was in the Rug Burns, and I got off the road, and she made me some tea, and then we were making stained glass art and hanging out and writing songs. And she's got a spunky attitude, and we ended up writing a bunch of songs together. One of them turned out to be this massive hit that sold like 15 million records. And it was kind of funny because she started getting all these record offers, you know, after she started playing in a little coffee house. And then she got asked to open, like when the record came out, she got asked to open for Peter Murphy of Bauhaus. And there was all these goth people there. And I was like, oh, this is not going to go well. And I was on the road with her and traveling with her. And I thought, man, I'm scared for her, because here's all these goth kids dressed in black. And she comes out and she's in a tank top and Levi's and barefoot. And she would just like put a spell over that crowd. And
oh, nice.
Goth kids would be crying and Like, it was crazy. And she says, like, really inappropriate things on stage. Uh-huh. And she just gives it. And it's not, and it, and I, it's not what you think you're coming to, like, Jewel. Uh-huh. It's like, and I think what a lot of people don't remember is she really was raised on a homestead in Homer, Alaska, with an outhouse and skinned her own cattle. And I mean, she used to tell me how she would skin me.
Yeah.
How she could cut me open and pull my guts out, and she'd peel my skin back. And I'd be like, that's crazy. It's like, she's tough. Yeah. And she went out and earned it and worked hard. And yeah, she's so, a lot of times she's not what people think. But man, you give her a guitar and put her around a campfire with a bunch of other singers, and you'll just go, oh, I see why she made it so big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super talented.
It all makes sense now.
Right. Yeah. And if you're just joining us, I'm here with musician Steve Pultz. He's here in Paonia to perform at the Paradise Cedar. And he has a great new release out called Shine On. And we'd love to hear another song if we could, Steve.
I would love to do another one for you. This is also on the new record, and this is called Furthest Star. And I wrote this with my buddy Anthony DaCosta, who lives in Nashville. And here it is. I would like to meet you at the corner store, the one on the east side where the people are poor. No one has to know. It's our thing. When the cold wind blows across the high gray sky, like an ice cream cone on an apple pie, we gotta go. Like Uncle Louie, Louie. This town is big enough for two, not big enough for me. So I'm gonna go far to the furthest star. I'm gonna see if it shines. I'm gonna trace the lines across your face and never leave this place. Never, never. Cried in front of you in bed the other night. You said, come here. Then you held me tight. I never did that before. You said, it'll be all right. I believed you then, and I believe you still. There's a better life beyond the hill. Happiness we'll drink our fill. To the furthest star. Oh. wanna see if it shines. I wanna trace the lines across your face and never leave this place. Never, never, never. I would like to meet you at the corner store, the one on the east side where the people are poor. No one has to know.
Steve Pultz, and that song was Furthest Star, off his new release, Shine On. So pretty. That's
thanks.
Like a what I call a lullaby for adults.
Oh, cool.
He's so like cradled and rocked by that.
It was funny because you were mentioning that song and I was like, man, I haven't played that in a while because nobody ever requests that. But I was so glad you requested it. It's one of those songs that's like track 9 or something on the record. So it sometimes gets lost.
I always like track 9.
Yeah.
I have a thing for track 9 and track 11.
Makes sense to me.
If there is one. I don't know.
Mine just has 10 tracks, but you pick track 9 and it makes sense because a lot of times track 9 is like this oddball misfit. Like, here you are, you're sequencing a record if people still like the way a record's sequenced. You know, sometimes people just kind of cherry pick a track. They're like on Spotify, they're like, I'll listen to this one song, which is, I mean, I'm honored if anybody listens even to one song. However, if they listen to the whole record the way that I sequenced it, a lot of times when you get to 9, you're like, uh-oh, because you're running out of songs and you need to force one in there. And sometimes it's an oddball and you're like, where does this song fit? It's really quiet. And
yeah, that's true. It is often different from the rest.
Yeah.
It's the one, yeah.
And it's usually
true.
The one the artist really loves that fans don't love as much, but then music heads really love them. They get into those tracks because they're like, ooh, this thing has soul. There was like this old saying they used to say in the record business. It was a turntable hit, meaning it sounded good on the turntable, but there was no call to action. It wasn't selling records.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times, we think we know. I mean, the proof of that whole thing is Bohemian Rhapsody, that song by Queen. I mean, if you follow that at all, and they're kind of big in the news this year because of the film that came out. But that song, what DJ would have picked that? What record label would have said, yeah, we're going to pick like an 8-minute song that sounds like opera.
Mm-hmm.
And that yet the audience went nuts. And the same for Stairway to Heaven. There's certain songs that people just go, how'd that become a hit?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they were songs that were so good that they were undeniable. And people, you got a picture
and
of the DJ spinning
too,
it. Yeah.
At the time.
Totally
like, this
different.
This is weird, you know? Yeah.
And the DJ breaks out the vinyl back in those days and throws it on. You hear the crackle of the vinyl and then it comes out through the speakers and some guy's Dodge Demon driving down the road and they're like, what is this? And you couldn't have Spotify back then. You would be like, I got to hear it again.
Right.
I remember I used to sit with a Radio Shack tape recorder in my car, just waiting to hear Kansas Dust in the Wind. It would be like, whatever it went.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
I don't even
know. So that you could record it?
So I could record it and figure it out how to play it.
Right.
Because, like, I couldn't afford to just go buy all these records. And a lot of times the records only had one good song on it, you know?
Right.
But then I would force myself to listen to it. And I go, oh, they have a lot more good songs than I thought. Because I was like, I paid $11 for this record. I'm going to listen to it 100
right.
times.
I'm going to learn to love every song on this thing. Do you remember the last album that you just played to death? Like, you just over and over and over again had to understand it at that level.
It was Ricky Lee Jones' Pirates.
Oh yeah.
And I was so into that record because lyrically it was just, it blew my mind. Like, she had this opening line that went, well, Eddie's got one crazy eye that turns him into a cartoon when a pretty girl goes by.
Mm.
I love that.
Yeah.
And she says, in the terminal where dreams let so many tickets through.
Yeah.
She's such a poet. And so I remember just studying that record.
Another song of yours
that I studied
was I Want All My Friends to Be Happy. And I think you're going to play it for us in a minute.
For some reason, that was the very first time I played this song, people were like, is that recorded? I have to buy it. And it took me a while to get into the studio, and it was on a record I put out called Folk Singer. And everybody really wanted that song. I like the vibe of it. Uh-huh. A lot of people have played it at people's funerals because in the song we tell cancer to F off. I wrote it for a friend of mine who had just died of cancer. And he was a really good friend of mine, and he called me, and I was on the road, and he said, hey, Steve-O, it's Kevo. I don't think I'm going to make it. And so I flew in to see him in San Diego, and he was in hospice, and I got to be with him, you know, the last couple days of his life. And it was pretty powerful to be able to be with him. And I brought my guitar in, and I sang him songs, and it was, we were singing rock and roll songs, which was really cool. And these nuns were next door, these Catholic nuns, because somebody else was dying. It was in a hospice house. And they were singing beautiful songs in Latin. And I was singing crazy rock songs because that's what Kevo wanted to hear. And the nuns came in and shushed me. And it was the greatest thing because Kevin, when they walked out, Kevin flipped him off as he was dying. It's just, the whole thing was just so funny and ludicrous to me because we were still two little idiots. You know, just two little asses
in a being
naughty. Like, he flips them up once the door shuts. Like, they're out of the room. And he's like, it still makes me laugh because he wasn't alive much longer. And that was like his final act of rebellion. And so I left, and he made me happy. And I thought, rather than writing some maudlin song about cancer, I'm going to write a song called I Want All My Friends to Be Happy. I want all my friends to be happy. I want all my friends to find love. I want all my friends to share good things and be blessed by the light from above. I want all my friends to be hopeful, not to be slaves to a bank. I hope that my friends never have to roll through the streets in a tank. I want all my friends to have kitchens stocked up with bountiful food. I hope they wake with a smile, say words like, let's all go to Peonia and be on the radio. Come on, dude. I want all my friends to know laughter, uncontrollable from deep in the gut. I want all my friends to have fine shoes and to pat someone cute on the butt. I want all my friends to go travel and to see the world for just what it is, a beautiful place to inhabit. It's a big melting pot made of bliss. I want all my friends to dance naked so that all of their neighbors can see. I want them all to be colorblind and to keep those skinhead racist wall-building politicians far away from me. I want all my straight friends to love all of the gay friends I have. I love it if we all went to dinner, 'cause my gay friends, they always pick up the tab. I want all my friends to be healthy, and when they see kale and greens, not just the scoff, I want them to live long and prosper, and to tell cancer to just go duck off. I had to substitute duck in there. I want all my friends to know one thing, that one day when I'm long dead and gone, I want them to know that I love them, and that's why I wrote them, why I wrote them this song. 'Cause I want all my friends to be happy, I want all my friends to find love, I want all my friends to share good things and be blessed by the light from above. I want all my friends to be happy. Cool. I want to end on this because it's a song by John Hartford and it's an instrumental. It's called Presbyterian Guitar. It's short. All right. I just feel like playing it.
Good.
Is that okay?
Of course.
Okay, here goes.